Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
And we're back on a Tuesday night with our admirable friends. Welcome.
Welcome, everybody.
Hello out there.
Glad to be back.
Yes.
Glad to be back on a great subject tonight.
Authenticity.
Yeah. And I guess the way we framed it was authentic intention. So we're trying to get to the inner side of authenticity tonight. It's great, a great subject, one that usually has lots of participation. And we've got quite a few letters we can bring in. Thank you all for writing in for tonight's show. And we'll be sharing that the second half. We'll go through the normal format of kind of reviewing the definition of authenticity and talking about the concept, and then we'll lead into the actual experience and the practice of practicing with authenticity, what that means and how we go about doing that.
If they want to text or chat in, what do they do? What do the listeners need to do?
They just go to admirablefriends.com. bbsradio.com/admirablefriends. And you, yes, please use the chat. We've got that open up here. And tonight we're going to do something a little different on gratitudes. We're actually going to go to our Admirable Friends system, and we're going to share the public gratitudes rather than the hosts giving the gratitudes. It's going to be nice because our Admirable Friends social network, our internet presence, has an anonymous conversations section, and in particular will be the gratitudes that were sent in anonymously, public gratitudes. And these are people, let me put the context here. These are people that have a free subscription to Admirable Friends, and they actually write in their journal each day gratitudes, things like gratitudes, appreciations, acts of kindness, determinations, goals, and whatnot, and track their evaluation, how they're doing across the various 10 ideal mind qualities. And one of the choices we have each time we write into our journal is whether or not we want to share it publicly or whether we want to keep that entry private. And if we do decide to share it publicly, it is done anonymously. So, Alex, that's pretty cool, isn't it, having public gratitudes.
Yeah, for anybody who hasn't seen it, like Buddy said, subscription's free to get in there. It's really powerful, and you're really beginning to see kind of a trend. I'm noticing it on social media. I'm noting it in small groups, and I'm hearing it on different YouTube videos and talks that people are giving, that the grateful gratitudes and appreciation is really taking over, kind of like a movement. And a lot of people are getting into the act of daily writing it down. And we're seeing a lot of studies come out that are showing the power of recognizing, grateful moments in your life and writing them down and recording them on a daily basis and the effect that has on your overall.
As a practice.
As a practice.
Yeah.
So as we're seeing that kind of shift go on, it's great knowing that the system, Admirable Friends system, has that built into it.
Right.
And so, like I said before, logging into the system is an act of the practice, because once you get into the system, You have the ability to go ahead and log those acts of gratitude, and then a lot of other stuff. And it's easy to use. I do it on my iPhone sometimes because it's formatted to it, so I can, middle of the day, you know, if I catch that I'm grateful for something, go right on, plug it in, and it's there.
But I have noticed that in a lot of these practices, they're still kind of mixing in between the words gratitude and appreciation. It's a fuzzy line between the two. It's not as clear as what we're defining an appreciation and a gratitude to mean. And just for our listeners, let's just recap that again. Alex, your appreciation is more of
an emotional, I guess, response.
For an incident.
It's kind of
And a gratitude would be more of a recognizing and reflecting of actions of others. And not only do you recognize that action, but you also kind of record or try to take an idea of the intention behind the action, as well as recognizing the person went out of their way, and we reflect on what lesson we learned from it.
The reflection is a huge part of a gratitude, that you don't say the appreciation. Appreciations, you just, that was nice, and then you kind of move on to the next thing. The gratitudes kind of cause you to look at your role in that and the action.
Well, first of all, it's outside of you. It's so much the appreciation, at least when I use my appreciations, there's nothing wrong with it, but I kind of recognize what I'm appreciative for, of what's come my way. Whereas with the gratitude, you got to reach outside yourself, a little harder, because we're framed it that we actually want to observe actions that were, someone went out of their way to help us. So you can't be waking up every morning and just write down that gratitude real quick when we frame it that way.
But there is room for the appreciations as well as the gratitudes.
And those are easy. So those are tap-ins.
It's not, right, but that kind of gets you going. It kind of gets one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
And I think the public gratitudes are really nice because it really does make you reflect more on your own gratitude.
Well, it's not so much the gratitude.
Yeah,
it's good to have that.
It reinforces kind of.
But what gratitude, I think, does is give us more identification of the action. And we're going to talk about this in our show today. So much of what we're trying to do is be skillful with our actions. So the more that we can bring attention to action, it's like the choo-choo train. The more we, I think a lot of us, and I know, again, speaking from my own perspective, when I started practicing, I had this feeling of really questioning whether I could change. And whether my habits were able to change. So to me, and I've noticed a lot of our admirable friends, they question, there's doubt as to our ability to change our habits. It's almost like we've lost our free will because we've become such an autopilot, so much attached to the electronic equipment and things being pushed at us, whether it's television.
We succumb to the whims of.
So anytime we can bring attention to the fact that actions matter, the more it gives us power that we know we can change. Even though we've had some past actions and past habits, we have free will.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we all say, the human being's got free will, but I think we've lost some of our free will, at least awareness of free will.
Yeah, the awareness, I think, is the big thing. But this is also very powerful. I mean, I haven't seen any... I haven't seen any other collection or system out there that allows you to see a community of gratitudes. You know, you often hear people saying, yes, I have the practice of writing down my gratitudes. And that's great. And people should keep them. But understand that my awareness of these gratitudes is important to a lot of other people as well.
Yeah.
And I look for...
Well, why would you share a public gratitude anonymously? What would be your motive? Let's get to intention on that one, Alex.
It would be out of knowing the power that the community of knowledge has.
And right, so you'd be helping someone else by sharing
completely,
it. Because you're not sharing it with your name associated with like a LinkedIn post.
Right.
A LinkedIn post has another agenda. Even though you might be truly giving a gift, it has the element of your name, your face being attached to it, so there's an element of self-promotion, any way you cut it.
Correct.
When you share a public gratitude without any name associated with it, it's a different deal.
And we
kind of
it's a gift to the other admirable friends.
We've joked before that the anonymous thing's kind of like, I don't care who you are, I care what you do. as people say, oh, no, I want to know who you are. Actually, no. Knowing who you are is very secondary to knowing what you do. I want to learn from
your
actions.
Now you got to be excited. Read a couple of these public questions out.
Let's go through a couple of them here. We'll just... here's a nice one. And of course, when you put in your public gratitudes, even though on the user side it asks you for a name to be added with it, names are not shared in public gratitudes. So
of who your gratitude,
who's your gratitude,
because it would
for.
Kind of reveal who you were.
Exactly.
If I was grateful to Carol, they'd kind of think, well, maybe that's Carol.
Exactly.
Buddy's Carol.
Let's run through the gamut of how many Carols we have. Yeah, exactly.
Of course, you never make my gratitude list.
It'd be interesting to find that gratitude. Let's find it. Okay, here's one. The action, giving up a weeknight evening to help run a kid's sports program. And they checked off that they trust their motives. They knew they went out of their way. The reflection on the action, several members no longer have kids in the program anymore, and it's really quite selfless.
Well, that's really nice when you think about that. That is a nice gratitude.
Okay, here's one. Taking the time to stay after work and coach. So somebody took the time to stay after work and coach and also find some material for me to read regarding my particular my practice better.
Hmm.
I trust their motives, this person said, and I know they went out of their way. It really shows he cares and wants me to do as well as possible. Oh, that's interesting. Alex, another one?
Yeah. The action, staying up late so the family has clean laundry. I would suspect this was my wife, but we do not know. and actually, this person checked off only one. I know they went out of their way and actually didn't check that they knew their motives.
That's okay. That's sometimes the case.
That's sometimes the case. So it is okay. That's why we put it in there. The reflection on the action, though, was taking care and nurturing others can take a lot of forms. This one, not so critical and being tired, I would have let it slide. So seeing how they put themselves in the kind of the circumstance and saying, I wouldn't have done it. So someone else doing it, I've got to be grateful for that because I wouldn't have done it.
Okay. Let's read another one. This one says, I'm grateful to a hardworking farmer that the food I just ate was the action. They were grateful to this person, and I know they went out of their way. And Alex, they didn't check that they knew their motives, because really the farmer could have been doing it for multiple different reasons. In reflection on this action, I take a lot of this kind of stuff for granted.
I was just going to say that. It's amazing how we do take a lot of the further away the actual person is from us in kind of that knowing or in our personal space.
But isn't it cool that people are putting this stuff in?
I think it's
very
cool.
Here's a cool one. Checked on my well-being as I lay asleep in a public space. So this person was asleep in a public space. Just based on my experience, I'm going to say airport, right?
Yeah.
You fall asleep,
and
you doze off.
Okay?
They checked both, and the reflection was that they share a common humanity demonstrated by this concern for a stranger.
Nice.
So, you know, it's...
Oh, here's a cool one.
Bringing people together, connecting.
This person's grateful to this person for his consistent, polite demeanor. And I trust their motives, and I know they went out of their way to be polite. And my reflection is this is such an admirable quality that I could truly learn from.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay, so folks, if you're listening to the show and you don't have a log on, you got to get one logged on because... Eventually, all the letters that you're writing will all come through that system as well.
How do they get a log on?
And you go to log on by going to admirablefriends.org and just sign up and you're off and running. Let's get into the body of the show. And tonight is on intentions. It's called autopilot is the opposite of authenticity. Autopilot and authenticity. And by definition, authenticity means... the honest effort to be aware of the true intentions preceding our actions, words, and thoughts.
Yeah, I like this one. For me, authenticity, this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where, out of the ideal mind qualities, this is the one that I just...
Well, you're a truth fanatic. You've always been that way. Truth is such an important element to you. I know that from day one. We've been married when we first met each other. Telling the truth's a big deal for you. So obviously telling the truth to yourself matters.
It does. It does. And when I find myself, either deceiving myself or being not less forward or trying to skirt my intentions, boy, I really want to get to the root of why I'm doing it.
But do you notice also when you start being honest with your own hypocrisy that you let other people off the hook a little bit?
Yes.
That's one of the benefits of this practice. Yeah. Because you're not so quick to judge them on a lie. Now, you know, people can sometimes not tell the truth because they weren't paying attention. The lie that really gets me in where I kind of shy away from people, and I'll be dead honest with you, is when people don't show remorse or any kind of shame associated with lying. Like, no problem. I'll tell a lie to get away from something. That I'm a lot more lenient of people that may not say the truth because they weren't aware of the truth, especially when it comes to intention. So that goes with the practice. So we're going to go right down our list of definition, and we're going to start with the two kinds of authenticity. And really, when you think of the word authenticity, you've got to think of the word truth. And so we have the number one is the truth of statements, which includes things that are heard, said, and done. And we call this the truth of our outer world of experience. So that's what...
I think this is the more common application of authenticity that people most likely connect with when they think of authenticity. I think most people are going to go with what we
say
the truth
do.
Of statements. These are really outside ourselves, the kind of end product, the result, which we're going to find, the result of how authentic you are internally
right.
is going to exhibit itself externally. And so, you know, those kinds of truths, yes, with what you say and what you do, I think is our more conventional term of authenticity.
Right. But relating to the mind qualities, the second form of truth, which we call truth of determination,
mm-hmm.
really is important. Remember, one of those elements of a good determination,
stage.
Which is the first mind quality, is it being truthful. So truth of determination, and we'll call that truth of the will, we're talking about the truth of the authenticity of the inner world.
Mm-hmm.
By this we mean true to our intentions. Okay, let's take that word, and everybody's using it for intention, and let's make sure we got a common understanding. Alex, what do you think intention is?
Intention for me would be kind of a conscious conversation prior to acting something out.
So it's thoughts in
right.
your head. It's
thoughts,
a conversation.
So this committee upstairs, this thought factory that's going on, is cooking up this sort of conscious reasoning
right.
For what I'm about to go and to do. And that intention is tied ultimately to something else.
Right.
And so, and we're
it's
going
kind of
find
tied
out,
to your past, a little bit of momentum.
A little bit of momentum, also tied to the future in the direction when you put a determination out where I'm going.
Right.
And so, I'll get into it a little bit more, but that's kind of where intention lies for me.
What about you, Carol?
I have to say that's similar to how I felt. It's the catalyst that
prior
starts
to the action.
It's the catalyst
yeah.
for the action.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that it would be a more skillful intention more than unskillful. That's
mm-hmm.
the whole...
Could we call it the reason for the action?
Sure.
Right?
No.
Can we use that word reason before the action?
The reason for the action. I think that's...
The reason I like calling that is because a lot of times we end up with this idea that reason and emotion are two different things. Remember that Seinfeld skit where you had emotion on one side and reason on the other? And when you blend the two together, that's where real wisdom comes to place. So if I look at a lot of our actions, especially the habits that we have troubling us, they're mostly rooted in emotion. So when we look to the reason that precedes the action, we're now blending reason and emotion together. Right? So that's a good way of looking at it. At least I like looking at it that way. Okay, truth of statements are fundamental requirements for admirable friends. Basically, because if we're going to welcome someone as an admirable friend and learn from them, then telling the external truth, that first truth, Alex, that you said most people can associate, is kind of a fundamental requirement for an admirable friend. If they're not telling the truth externally, then you can kind of...
And that you know, that takes a little bit of awareness on the individual side to be able to,
discern.
Exactly. Nobody just comes up to you and says, "Hey, I'm not authentic," or "I am authentic."
Yeah.
You have to discern based and judge based on that person's actions over a period of time, whether you feel they're being...
They prove up.
And again, you've got to be truthful yourself, or you won't recognize the truth in someone else.
Absolutely. So it's really... we know the
Catch
value.
22.
Yes, we know the value that people around us have on our own lives.
Yeah.
And so,
My thunder right out of my last bullet line. Behavior is contagious, and therefore, associating with truthful people is essential to the pursuit of living a more reliably happy life.
Well, the third definition, it comes as authenticity is a characteristic of maturity. And that just stands to reason that somebody that has more mature, somebody that has like raw kind of strengths or talents is going to make kind of mistakes and be a little more ignorant to the fact of their intentions. Whereas somebody that's more mature, that has a more full-bodied approach to their truthfulness and authenticity, is going to pretty much see things for what they are. So I think that's...
And that presence is pretty well seen. You can see that, can't you, when people are that way?
They have an aura about them.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess some people call it comfortable in their own skin, or you can see it.
I agree.
There's an element of the time in the saddle, having been there enough, you know?
Yeah. And the inner truth, when you're true to your intentions, it's really part of the self-mastery, the self-development, the self-growth. And how could it not be? I mean, when you start looking at your intentions in a truthful manner, that opens yourself up to such development and the possibilities and the wonderment. That's the word that you use, buddy. You know,
yeah.
The wonderment of it all. It really does kind of widen the scope of what you're looking at. So
I think that goes on. Are we on to the fourth point now?
Yeah, why don't you take that one, Al?
So authentic determination, this is kind of that second truth, the truth of determination. And if we recall lesson one, determination is kind of our starting point with the 10 qualities. And really that determination is that measuring stick we can throw up against the wall and then gauge a lot of our actions against that that result, that goal. I know we've kind of interchanged some words there. And so the determination is very important when it comes to authenticity, because when we want to evaluate whether or not we are being authentic in an internal manner, it's all in relation to that determination. And so, are we being genuine to what we've set out there as our overall goal? And so, we continuously check back in when we do those actions to make sure they're in line. When they're not in line, it's not a matter of judging and beating ourselves down, but it's a matter of recognizing the inauthenticity, that autopilot.
Seeing it for what it is.
Exactly.
In a raw sense, in its real sense.
Absolutely. And so... like I said, they're kind of a symbiotic relationship. The first and the second truth of statement, determination. So if that inner truth, if that inner authenticity, isn't being exhibited, then you can almost bet that outward authenticity is not going to be in line. And that's why we use things like stress to bring us back as a teaching moment, because... let me run it like...
Well, it's an indication.
It's an indication. So how do we know if we're... how do we know whether or not internally we're being authentic or not? Look to what you do know. And we have stress, which is a physical manifestation to draw you back and just question yourself. Huh. Am I being authentic internally?
Yeah.
That's the great beauty about the practice. Anytime we get a chance to direct ourselves back inwardly is we stand a much better chance of not falling down that path again. And so Point four, our inner honesty, it becomes our inner compass. So we just kind of spoke to that a little bit. It's kind of directing our actions. And it says, last little point, as we learn to be true to our intentions, we see deeper and deeper into the power of our fabrications and build more determinations towards the way of living.
So that's the choo-choo train.
It's a choo-choo train, becomes a snowball, and you end up gaining some momentum.
Carol, you said something to me this morning that it was really motivating to most of my day. And you talked about what's the risk of telling the truth. Well, why don't you let our listeners, recall what you said to me.
I do. We were talking about authenticity, and I said that I used to think that facing the truth would be just the worst thing, you know, worse than death sometimes.
This is the internal truth you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. You know, going there would be just such a stressful hardship, or it's like I just try not to go there, so to speak, you know. And then the tide shifted, and it was almost like now I'm looking at it, and it's like I'm saying to myself, you know, how foolish I was, because telling the truth or being honest with yourself is what's worst thing that's going to happen. It's not going to kill you.
Right.
If anything, and that's kind of where I was coming from at the end with my last one, it's almost like the saying says, the truth shall set you free, because it does have a very empowering feeling, and it just kind of gives you that. It's almost like taking a very deep breath and going, you know.
Well, it's like, how do you spell Rolaids, R-O-L-A-I-D-S? How do you spell relief?
Yeah.
T-R-U-T-H.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I found that for myself, that by asking myself, well, what's the worst thing that can happen if you go look at this? It's not going to hurt you. If anything, the other side of that fear, I should say, of investigation is quite enlightening and liberating.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like there's a big lie that you're holding.
No.
It's just that you're not really, some of the things you do, you just kind of cover up over the years, and they normally perceive the habits that you don't like. There's an underlying motive or desire, or I call it a hook, that's hooking you into that action. And you just got to kind of look at it and say, why am I doing that?
Well, also, too, if there's a duplicitous nature to yourself where you say, I'm a very honest person. You know, I'm honest.
There's the cover up there.
It's like, whoa, time out. You know, that's the outward persona. But what about
it's
the
also
honesty
the denial
to yourself
the
inside?
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it's one of those.
All the letters that were written in, the truth and the honesty was fantastic that was in those letters today.
Yeah.
We'll get to those in the second half of the show, but they were really honorable.
What, you were going to add some?
No, I was just going to say, you know, if I usually find myself, if I have to ask myself and spend 60 seconds asking myself, why am I doing this? Chances are I haven't gone deep enough, and I need to really find out what I'm doing there. Chances are that action's on autopilot. If you don't have to ask yourself, what are my intentions for what I'm doing?
Or doubting the intention,
right.
Saying, is this, should I be doing this, or, you know.
So, and yeah, we all have, gosh, there's so much you can work on with this, with this quality. But I think ultimately we're going to get to the point, and I think people are probably listening and asking themselves, authenticity, great, how do I grow it?
Right. Well, it gets into the practice. That gets us into the practice. Carol, last point before we take a break.
Well, the last point really does kind of encompass what we were talking about earlier, and that you do develop an inner calm that when you're more truthful and honest with yourself.
That's the relief you just spoke
about. Yeah. So it makes the reconciliation and forgiveness possible, because you're reconciling in your own
self. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Makes reconciliation.
So it's sort of like evening the score. You say to yourself, yeah, okay, I got this one.
It's interesting, because when it says you make reconciliation, forgiveness possible, that almost suggests that the reason you weren't forgiving somebody is you weren't being truthful about why you weren't forgiving them. What does that mean when you make forgiveness possible by being authentic?
Well, if you're harboring something towards somebody else, maybe ill will or something, it could be one of those defense mechanisms and a very deflective,
Well, it's a lot like your example you gave of Goodwill a couple of weeks back. Remember you said you had that person and you let it go?
Right.
So it's almost the same kind of thing. You were true to your intentions of why you...
And all of these, and that's a good point, because all of these ideal mind qualities are interwoven in with each other. It's like one big fabric, you know? The threads are all weaving into each other.
Well, it's whole part whole. You break it apart the way the English trained you in school.
Like authenticity, and going back to what I said, how do you grow it? Well, the entire practice grows it. It's not saying, hey, I got to go be more authentic, and all of a sudden authenticity is, you know, filling up the bucket. Any other of these mind qualities, when you dive into them, like we said, there's a lot of ways into this path, and there's a lot of work that can be done. You don't have to take them all into this big, you know, aggregate of 10 qualities and attack it, you know, eat it like an elephant, one bite at a time. And so by doing things like restraint and doing things like goodwill, that adds in to the element of authenticity naturally. So you can really hop on this path at any point, and that's still going to grow.
Well, I was just going to, that kind of wraps up this part of the power of authenticity, this last one, because the last statement says, the pursuit itself develops qualities of the heart that liberates us from the basic obstructions of fear, hatred, and greed.
Yeah.
So I think that speaks to what I was saying before about the fear of looking into it. You know, what do you have to be afraid of, you know? So,
let's take a moment for a break, and then we'll be back with our actual practical part. Alex, like you said, how do we practice authenticity? Be right back.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is, what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness? We're grateful to have you join us today.
Right.
We're back on the practice side. And what I want to do is I want to frame our discussion with a mathematical equation. I put it up on Facebook. I know Alex had a big, tough time with this mathematical equation, but let's see if our listeners can make some sense of this. A plus B equals C. Okay, and we're going to try to solve the equation for A, which most of the time we don't know what A is. B is our actions. C is the result from our actions, and A is the intention that precedes the action. So when we add our intention to our action, we get a result. Because the intention kind of powers, it's like the rudder, it kind of powers the action, and it brings a certain result. Now, if we're not being aware or truthful to our intentions, we don't know what A is, right? However, if we start from the back end and look backwards in the rearview mirror, we have a result that's unacceptable. Okay, let's have an example that, let's use food. I'm overweight. My result's unacceptable. My habit is I love donuts, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's B. C would be the overweight, the result, right? And there's other bad results too. Maybe money that I'm wasting on donuts, I don't know. But the result is the result of the action. And when we look at result in the terms of admirable friends, it's always the skillfulness of the result. And how do we measure skill? Whether it leads to stress or not. That's what skillful and unskillful is. So when we think of result, C, it's whether it's skillful or unskillful. The action itself is the action, and then we have the result. And it's not just skill. stress to us or to others, it's also others. So the result is whether it leads us to stress or reliable happiness or others. So we're always solving for A, which is looking for intention. And sometimes we need to look through the rearview mirror and start with the result of the action, and then kind of work back and say, what is the hook, the intention? And one of the kind of clues I want to give to finding A, and this is the hard part, it's kind of twisted, because we always do things for pleasure as humans, and as a result, that hidden allure or intention, there's a pleasant hook there, which is hard to kind of swallow when all of a sudden you have an action or habit you don't like, and all of a sudden you got to go try to find out.
It's hard to believe that you would ever do anything that would harm you. Or I know it's bad, but...
How could I find it pleasant? And so The first blush, you say, no.
Not me.
But when you start practicing this way, Alex, there's always an allure. There's a hook. And you'll see that. I'm going to come back to that A, that missing part of the equation.
Honesty pays off. When you drill down on that one.
Well, let me put it this way. That's why you're probably not being honest in the first place.
Well, you're trying to brush it under the rug and saying it's, you're averting and hoping it'll go away or just.
Well, it's like I said, if you're talking behind somebody's back at the water cooler, there's the unskillful action and the result is causing stress to others. And what is A? What's your reason for doing it? Could be a variety of.
You know, it's funny you say that, talking behind your back. I'll just interject an example exactly. I was getting ready to jump in the shower yesterday, and this thought popped into my head to go in to tell my wife. I said, oh, well, gosh, I'll tell her. And it was about somebody else. It was very meaningless. Somebody else did something, or they wrote something or posted something. And I said, oh, well, I'm just going to bring this up, like with my wife, you know, just a conversation. And we do it all the time. I'm just going to bring up conversation. I paused. And I literally owe this to the practice. I paused. And I took 2 seconds to ask myself, why are you bringing this up as conversation right now? And I saw that my intention was only to stir more conflict. Right. And I knew that by doing it, I would heat up somebody else because I knew how
they felt. That's the unskillful result.
And that was the unskillful result.
So you were dealing with A, B, and C at the same time.
When I truncated that intention and I said, oh, no. Yeah. This is not going to lead me towards any reliable happiness, and it's going to definitely add stress to somebody else for no apparent reason, stopped.
Right.
The conversation never took place.
And that's a great illustration, Alex, because I think a lot of times when we're trying to fix our habits, we're trying to fix the action without getting to the intention. That's like trying to put the fire out by putting water on smoke.
Exactly. Let me tie it with the authenticity. Because my overall determination is to live reliably happy and to not cause others stress, I saw that the action, the skillful action to not go down the road of having this conversation did keep me in line with my determination. Therefore, I was being authentic.
Right. And let's just make that point again for our listeners. What Alex is saying is he's got his mission statement and he's got his overall determination plugged. He's definitely drinking the Admirable Friend's Kool-Aid here. Right? He's got it plugged.
I'm on my second glass.
Unreliable happiness. No, but it's a good point, because since he's got that as his overall context for his life, then he frames all of his experience. And really, all we experience is intentions, actions, and results all day long. Mm-hmm. That's what goes on.
Yes.
There's an intention, there's an action, a result. We do it all day long. Just snap into what you just said about to talk to my wife. What's my reasoning? What's my intention? What's the action? So you're now framing your entire experience as to whether it's causing stress for me or to others. Mm-hmm. And see, once you do that, you're no longer really taking things personal. If you, like you, Carol, like you said, if you're being honest about your intentions, it's no longer me that did something.
I, for the life of me, I don't know why this thought came into my head. I don't know where it came from. All I know is I was quick enough to see the reasoning behind what I was about to go through with.
And that's why you jump and the net appears. It's an easy deal as long as you say, I'm willing to go there and think of it. But I think in your case, and the point made, if you can get your overall determination straight, this is a lot easier to do this practice.
Well, because you have a direction as to what your intentions are and what your actions.
Well, it's how you view. It's how you're viewing your experience. See, he's now viewing his entire experience as if he had a pair of glasses and says, "I'm going to go out there today, and stress is going to be my teacher." In other words, I'm going to look at all my actions and find out whether they lead me or others to stress.
Yeah, and I want to disclaim that this is not just, hey, I woke up and I tried those on. I am daily putting it to the test. This is a science experiment of life. I've set a determination out there, and I physically I have to consciously remind myself each day to check back in to make sure that determination is still a valid experiment and hypothesis going forward. And it's times like this and actions like this that I can look back and say, yes, it is.
Yeah.
What did you feel when you just didn't go any further and you truncated it? Do you remember what you thought or what you felt? Or
there was a sense within me that I felt proud of
doing the right thing,
the practice. I said, you know, this is exactly what I was hoping would be the result of continuing with this practice and sticking in there and really forcing myself to stay in that stream, stay in that focus, stay with that determination. You've put it out there. Take care of it.
Do you think it strengthens your determination?
Absolutely.
Of course it does.
Absolutely.
It's a choo-choo train.
It's proving it up with facts. So when I go to this courtroom and I'm putting this in front of the jury, I've got facts here to support my claim.
Yeah. I live my life as to watching for stress for me and others. It's a perfect deal.
Right.
It stops me from making mistakes.
And we form our world out of our own perceptions anyways. I'm putting fact to my own perceptions. So I'm saying, no, I've proven this up. I've tested this. The results are the same. But just because I tested it up today doesn't mean it's going to hold up tomorrow. So I am continually testing it.
Well,
and that's what the practice does.
Yeah. Let me provide you some focus, though, just also, in addition to watching it and proving it. Also think about the things that you can build, the qualities that you can build to help reinforce your ability to inspect under that framework.
Oh, absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
A sidebar.
Absolutely.
So now you're using the maximizer strength of yours and saying, what are the things? And this is why you would meditate. This is why
absolutely.
You would contemplate.
Absolutely.
Because you could put gas in the tank to practice
and
this.
And that's what I think we're going to see here with a lot of these letters we go through is that it's great in theory to say, oh, yes, I'm going to do that. What are you going to do tomorrow? What are you going to do the next day? What are you going to do the day after to take care of what you just experienced, to grow that, to say,
yeah.
To nurture that.
I do like the progression the way you said it, because you first proved that the stressed as your teacher works, mm-hmm. and you did it on a one or two transactions. Then you start saying, what do I need to do to build the capacity to be a good connoisseur of stress.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? If I'm going to live my life as stress as my teacher, what would you do? You would practice your observation skills and you'd practice your honesty skills. Those are the two prerequisites.
Well,
you've got to be honest about your experience and you have to be a good observer. Because if you're not watching these things, like you said, Cal, if you're not watching outer, inner, outer, you're not paying attention to this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you're out playing the blame game, this practice is never going to work. You know? So, all right. Now that we've given kind of our editorial comments.
Yeah, let's get to some letters here.
Yeah, Carol, why don't you give us an example of a writer that wrote into us.
Okay, so we have one email that came in. And it says, "Dear admirable friends, I'm sure we all have many bad habits that we don't care to admit to, but my one real bad habit is my love for sweets. You might say that it's not such a bad habit. However, it is very bad for me as I'm a diabetic and it could be detrimental. My question is, how does one prevent a bad habit? Please explain, as I have tried thinking of a bad habit as poison. It doesn't work. Is there one blanket answer as how to prevent all bad habits? I'm looking forward to this topic as I do not know anyone that is not guilty or does not care to admit it."
She just served you softball. Now you got to answer it.
Softball?
Ooh. No, she says there's one that does them all.
Yeah, well.
What is it?
Well, I was going to say no initially. There isn't one blanket, like one magical answer. There's kind of a... I thought there was looking at me now. Am I digging myself into a hole?
Yeah, I'm going to let you go. Here's your shovel. Go.
Well, of course, you have to get to the root.
I'm going to shut my mouth. Go ahead.
Go.
The one blanket answer is getting to the root of the intention. Because obviously there is an allure to the sweets. And the reason I think I'm hedging it is because I, like this writing person, has a problem with sweets as well. So that means if I confess to what the answer is for them, that means I better.
But the normal psychological answer is, we're going to get into the storyline. Well, why do you like sweets? My mother likes sweets. Oh, I really get away from that whole storyline. Get underneath the action. The common element is you've got to understand what the allure is. The process. And it's A plus B equals C.
Right. And so the blanket statement is, it's the intention. Get to the root of the problem as to what's the allure, what's the draw. Is it comfort? Is it guilt? Is it, you know,
Yes. It's
a myriad of emotions that's attached to it.
And it may not be the same allure for everyone. I think this is what you were saying. It's not the same allure for every single action. However, the way you go about it is the same. In other words, you search for the intention.
I think you set me up with this one because you know that this is my Achilles. And so by me looking at it, it's sort of like, you've got a problem with sweets, not me.
You know,
but if I tell you how to fix it, then I'm going to have to.
But it's not going to be the standard relative answer as to don't eat sweets, they're not good for you.
Well, no.
It's like, what's your draw? Well, what's your pleasure out of it?
Let's hone in on the term that was used. And I think this is a very, very, highly utilized term in our culture right now is this habit. I mean, if I had a dime for every book out there that was based on how to fix habits,
right,
or how you do this, and you can go from the source code, you got to do something 10,000 times to fully replace it, or, you know, you've got to rewire yourself this way. What we're saying here is you're focused, back to your equation, you're focused on the wrong letter.
Yes.
You're focused on the
you're
wrong letter.
You're looking
at B when you should be looking at A. B is the action. The habit is the action.
Right.
That's it.
What's the intention of underneath it?
Go back one step.
Well,
the reason why you can't break it is because you're still focused on it. You haven't removed yourself to say, what's causing this habit?
Right. What's the reason behind the emotion?
To ask that question will let you know where your practice is.
It's like a magic trick. It's the diversion. It's not here. It's there.
It's the shell.
But one thing I want to make a note.
Now, the real thing is, it's there.
Let's stop trying to be perfectionists, though, because as we go through this and we diagnose the intention, we don't necessarily let go and the only answer is don't eat sweets anymore. We're just trying to open up a range of better choices, right,
mm-hmm,
for intention. Because if you can nail down the intention, in this particular case, it might be that, I have too much time on my hand during it. Bad example. But let's say that's the case. So the better choice might be just go read a newspaper or go do something else with your time instead of eating the sweets. We're not just saying no. When we do this kind of work, we're trying to find a more skillful A. You find out what A is, and then you say, how do I redirect A?
Right?
So we don't necessarily.
And depending
well,
on the.
Find, oh, go ahead. I'm
no,
sorry.
No, go.
Well, I was going to say, once you start delving into that, you find that the allure has diminished. It's not quite as seductive anymore.
Well, that's in our journaling. What we do is have you do a seesaw, and so you put the allure on one side, and on the other side, you put the drawback. So there's an allure to the sweet, and then there's a drawback to the sweet, and you've got to use your reason to kind of weigh these things, or your discernment. And try to discern a way through it.
Yeah, the way you laid it out there in the email I'm going to get to had laid it out just like that, like it is in the system right now where you have the habit, the allure, the downside, and the strategy. I love the way the system frames that out for you because now we're talking about actually doing something and learning from it, right? To say, yeah, what's the allure? We're sitting here, you know, pontificating about allures and downsides.
Alex, you know why I framed it? I don't want to hear the narratives.
Exactly.
I'm sick of it.
Exactly. I ask you what time it is, and you tell me how to build a watch factory. Just get in there.
Don't tell me about the labor pain. Show me the baby.
Here it is, the allure. Tell me what it is. If you don't know, ask yourself the question.
Ask yourself
figure
the
it
question.
Out. It's a 1, 2, 3, 4 checklist.
You know how many coaching calls I've done where they keep telling me the storyline?
I know.
I put them on mute. I don't want to hear it.
I know. And that's what I love about it. So, I mean, are we good with that? You want me to go into this
email?
Yes,
go for it.
Where are we going? This writer handled in, and I'm sure had some experience with using this in the system. So the troubling habit for this individual Specifically, the habits are the time wasters, specifically mindless TV and internet surfing. I have no idea what this person's talking about. Never committed any of that.
I'm guilty.
I am intentionally surfing
TV,
all the time.
Internet surfing.
The allure. Enjoying the brain candy requires nothing active on my part. So I can check out and go as long.
Is that what you should
wrote? I can go along for
brain
the ride.
Candy.
Look at that. Yeah, I could just go along for the ride. With TV, I actually think there is some childhood-related comfort that is derived from spending time that way. Okay? The downside, time is being wasted. There is nothing of value that I have gained in exchange for the time I spent engaged in the activity. There is some harm that comes with it, as filling the mind up with junk is not without some price.
Well, this person's doing the deal. So they not only wrote in, they're actually doing, they must be using the journal. Go.
Yeah, yes. And here's the great part,
alternative strategy,
being aware of the autopilot mode that is usually in operation when indulging in the habit. As I work on changing these habits, just asking myself, why am I spending time this way, seems to disrupt the pattern a bit. I also am making a connected effort to have on hand more edifying resources I can go to when I find myself with extra time on my hands. Yeah. I mean,
sounds like he or she's doing the drop.
Yeah, but I like the fact that they're saying just asking myself and spending time this way seems to disrupt the pattern a bit.
What's the space?
Yeah,
we're talking about
it's a bit. And that's one thing I want to say about this practice. It's not a home run every time you do it.
And that's what I was going to say before this is that, you know, This isn't a shotgun approach and just go habits.
Yeah.
I'm going to change them all tomorrow. All the habits I feel are bad.
You may have to work at one for a couple of years.
You may have to. And
but the more you see the movie, the more it's a bad movie.
Use some discernment here,
but
right?
If you start with one, if you start the process with one, the others could fall by the wayside because you're saying, habits? What habits?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Okay. Last one because we're getting tight for time. Which of your habits are troubling to you? This person writes, my habit to become stressed and tense at work is number one. It's not working with difficult people or that the work itself is stressful. Rather, it is my desire to get the work done as quickly and as with much quality as possible.
Mm.
I work it almost in a frenzy sometimes. It leaves me completely wiped out at the end of the day.
Mm.
Again, you can feel the authenticity there, right?
I know.
Being honest. What is the hidden allure that precedes that habit? This person says, in particular, recognition by superiors and peers, fear of failure, sense of progress, and productivity. Three distinct discernments.
Those are three big hooks right there.
Three big hooks. You can see why they're doing it. They got three big hooks.
They're big hooks.
Big hooks. What is the downside to the bad habit? Generates lots of stress. There's your framework, Alex. Lack of energy to interact with peers at work and lack of energy outside of work. Stress, stress, stress. Okay, so there's your seesaw. The downside, and you got the allure, the hook, and the draw, or the downside. What is an alternative strategy to overcome this bad habit? Person writes, set reasonable goals and schedules and work at a comfortable pace to reach these goals. Not everything has to be done right this second. Using wisdom to know when to rush and when not to. Maintaining a better mindfulness of my attention at work to head off stress. Most importantly is to develop the intention to not be stressed before I ever get out of bed in the morning. Hope your show goes great.
Wow.
Man, that's amazing. Isn't it? They write this, they type this stuff up. This is practice. This is the real deal. This person's doing it. You know, just by writing this stuff down is such an important aspect of dealing with it.
Well, yeah, we definitely know from studies shown that the act of writing something down does something internally to us as far as driving us and committing us to it, to continue to do it.
Absolutely.
So even speaking about it. So one act is thinking about it. Another is writing it down. Sharing it, you've done the trifecta right there.
Well, not only are you sharing it, you're publicly committed, but you're also helping the other person.
Exactly.
They're turning around saying, well, if they're doing it, I might as well do it too. And this is what's so important about the networking and the sharing with others. You've said this before, Carol. You do get inspired when other people practice. It helps your practice.
It really lifts up my practice and supports me in a way that I can appreciate. because it's very helpful.
I do want to share one other thing with authenticity, and what we tend to see a lot of times are the focus on bad habits. And while the work is, the majority of the work will be done working on bad habits, let's not shy away from our good habits, because there's a lot of insight we can get from some of those good habits. When we look at the same litmus test of a good habit, well, what's the allure of this good habit, and what are how is this manifesting itself towards a determination? So look towards some habits you have that are good habits. I know Buddy's looking at me and saying,
"You throw that positive psychology, don't you?
I'm a positive person, and I do think if you continuously go at it from bad habits, bad habits, bad habits, you run a potential risk of getting down on yourself. And I do think that on the brighter side, you have some good habits that are contributing to your life. So look at those a little bit. Sometimes you can find some insight in those good habits to lead you towards.
But he's already he's termed them bad. Okay, that's like making to me a keystroke mistake on a piano lesson. That's how you learn. So you want to call it mistake and bad. I don't see it as bad per se.
But I also think that good habits came out of bad ones before. So there is some insight in that good habit. You have solved it in a certain sense once before. Look at how you solved it. And they're good.
Oh, there you go. That's good.
But that's what I'm talking about.
Okay. But I'm not just talking about stroking yourself on your good habits.
No.
I'm
talking about drill down into a good habit, just as you would a bad habit, to understand the formula. Well, break it down to the formula.
Yeah, if we're talking about an artist, a painter, any other skill that's learned, of course, well, let's look at golfer. You're going to visualize the good shots you hit, and then you're going to deal with it. But you're also going to deal with the mistakes.
Glad to see you come around, buddy.
No, I thought you were giving me that positive psychology stuff where we have to stroke ourselves to feel good. And I'm saying we shouldn't even feel bad to start with. If we are, then we're really not approaching it in a discerning, action-oriented way. We're still taking it personal.
Sure.
But when we say a bad habit, it's something that we want to get rid of. But we label it bad because we haven't drilled down on the intention, which is going to give us the freedom to look at it in a real way and say, it's not a bad
unskillful
habit.
Thank you, Carol. And that's where I like going. Skillful versus unskillful.
Thank you. It takes the person out of
me. I would have told you this an hour ago.
Ready to roll. We're all done. We went through this one. This is, like I said, one of our favorite shows.
It flew by. Are we done? Really?
Yeah, we're getting the cuff.
My gosh.
We're getting the hang.
Getting the signal.
It's time to say bye-bye, folks.
Until next Tuesday night.
Hope we'll see you online. Hello@admirablefriends.org. Keep those cards and letters coming.
Have a great week.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.